Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our colleagues, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls until we ask for calls, because we have with us this afternoon Mr. James Bamford, and we're going to be talking about his latest book, A Precept for War. Now, I've read his other book, Body Secrets and The Puzzle Palace, but this is a fascinating insight into the things that led up to the war, what really happened on September 11th. Situation that allowed this attack to happen, and then why George Bush was determined to go to war with Iraq, irrespective of weapons of mass destruction, irrespective of 9/11, and with that as a background, Mr. Bamford, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, thanks a lot, Dr. Stan. I appreciate it.
Now, you've done a lot of you must have done a lot of personal interviews, because, I mean, how would you know about some of the meetings like the one you described that took place, there shortly after President Bush got in the White House, where he talked about how he wanted to, certainly put into place this clean break strategy that had been put forward by Wolfowitz 6 years earlier. And then, of course, this, of course, also called for taking out Saddam Hussein. Would you want to develop that? I thought that was a fascinating part of this whole story of the pretext for war.
Sure, I appreciate it. A lot of people think that the idea for war came after September 11th and had a lot to do with weapons of mass destruction, but in actuality, three of the key architects for the war, Richard Perle, who became the chairman of the Defense Policy Board, which is a very powerful Pentagon office, David Wilmser, who became Vice President Cheney's Middle East advisor, and Douglas Fife, who became the number three person in the Pentagon, the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy. In 1996, all three of them were advising Prime Minister Netanyahu, the newly elected Prime Minister of Israel. They wrote a policy paper recommending to Netanyahu that Israel go into Iraq and oust Saddam Hussein, basically go to war with Iraq and get rid of Saddam Hussein, and then move into Syria and Lebanon. So this was what their recommendation was, and it went on for a number of pages exactly how they should do it and so forth.
Now, didn't a lot of this involve getting America, at least initially, out of there so that we couldn't intervene as if they went ahead and did what they needed to do from a military point of view?
Part of it involved, ironically, part of it involved creating pretexts, and they actually wrote that in the documents, where they wanted to get U.S. support for, this is, again, these U.S. advisors, Perle, Wolfowitz, and Wilmser, advising the Israelis to go to war in Iraq to oust Saddam Hussein. And as part of that, this war plan that they were drafting for Netanyahu, they said that in order to get American support, you should go on television and say that you're doing this in order to get rid of weapons of mass destruction and in order to get rid of drugs and counterfeit American dollars being made in these countries. In other words, that would be the pretext in order to get the U.S. to back this war that would have been done totally without provocation.
Hold back. We'll be back in just a moment right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is James Bamford, and he's written a fascinating new book called A Pretext for War, and he's written a lot of very, very good work. I don't know whether we still carry his body of secrets, but it was an excellent book. He wrote The Puzzle Palace. His latest book, A Pretext for War, gives you a lot of the things you're not going to read. And my secretary says we still have copies of The Body of Secrets. It's an excellent book. I got a lot of information you won't read elsewhere, as this book contains a lot that you won't read elsewhere. And we were just talking about a paper that was written approximately 6 years before George Bush went into the White House. It was called A Clean Break. It had been written by Paul Wolfowitz and Douglas Feith and one other a gentleman who was not at that time in government. And they were advising Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel how they could have a pretext for war. And they were going to have to come out and they were going to have to lie. They were going to have to say, well, Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. We've got to do away with his counterfeit currencies, American currency, and, oh, he's a terrible guy. That's why Israel has to attack Saddam Hussein and then Lebanon and then Syria. And we've got to get the Americans to support us. So we've got to lie to them. And that's what, in essence, they were saying, wasn't it?
That is what they were saying, yeah. Actually, Wolfowitz wasn't part of it. It was Feith, who was Wolfowitz's deputy, and Wimser, who was Cheney's Middle East advisor, and Richard Perle, who's really one of the key architects of the war. And that's what they were basically saying. They were saying to Netanyahu, this is what you should do. You should attack Iraq, and then you should attack Syria and Lebanon, and in order to get the Americans involved, go on television and say things that are of interest to the Americans, weapons of mass destruction, counterfeit money, and drugs and so forth, when the real reason was because they really wanted to create a very peaceful buffer around Israel and commit basically an unprovoked war.
And this was really a pretext for war. And what Mr. Bamford brings out is that no sooner was George Bush in the White House than he called together a small part of his staff, sat down in a small room, and told them, this is in essence what we're going to do. Is that essentially what happened?
Well, what happened was that, to back up just a little bit, George Bush show was inaugurated in January 2001, and that same month, one of those signers of that clean break...
Hold on, that will be right back
A
moment here. Well, yeah, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is James Bamford, and he's going into the background of how it was that George Bush called together a few of his closest advisors, Condoleezza Rice and Dick Cheney and Colin Powell and one or two others, I don't know how many, but there weren't very many there, and announced he was going to go along with his program that had been written some years before called A Clean Break, which was to justify a preemptive attack on Saddam Hussein. Now, this was long before 9/11, so then Mr. Bamford was going to go back and sort of fill in the parts of the story that I left out, because I'm just reciting the story from his book. So you pick up the story there, please.
Sure. In January 20th of 2001, George Bush was inaugurated president. That same month, one of the key architects of the Clean Break Memorandum, this David Wimser, wrote a paper, and he said that he recommended that the United States and Israel launch a war in the Middle East. And basically the reason for it was to show the countries in the Middle East who's boss, so they won't mess with either Israel or the United States. And he recommended a war that stretched from Libya all the way to Iran. It would have been an enormous war.
Oh, how would anybody in their right mind advocate involving an America in a war of that magnitude?
Well, that was the key. I think you hit the key word there, right mind.
So we do have people then in Washington, D.C. who look at the world differently than people like you and me.
Well, what's scary is this person who wrote that paper, and that paper is still there. Anybody that is interested in it is still on the website of the American Enterprise Institute.
And the American Enterprise Institute went right along with that?
Well, they published the paper.
All right.
They published the paper the very same month that Bush was elected, and then they took this person and made him Cheney's Middle East advisor. They liked his ideas so much. But then after he wrote the paper, then Bush had a had the very first National Security Council meeting. That's the first time he brings everybody together around the table to discuss the key aspects of national security involving his brand new administration. And virtually the only item on the table, other than becoming closer to Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, the only other item that they discussed that entire day, and this is according to the former Secretary of the Treasury, Paul O'Neill, the only other item they discussed was Iraq and how to take care of Iraq.
And of course, that is covered in Paul O'Neill's book.
Right, Paul O'Neill went into it in a great amount of detail. He was sitting right there, and when he finished, he says he thought to himself, what are they talking about here? Why is this such a big problem? We have Saddam Hussein basically boxed in. He's never threatened the United States. He's not a current threat to the United States. And another person at the table was Colin Powell. And just 2 weeks after that meeting, Colin Powell was giving an interview on television, and he said, well, Saddam Hussein's no longer a major threat. He's now contained. The United States has him contained. He's in a box. We don't think he's a major threat anymore. So this is what the reality was. But then one of the things that David Wilmser wrote in his paper, in addition to we should be going to war in the Middle East, one of the things he wrote was, crises are opportunities. And that's what the September 11th attacks were. They were, it was a major crisis that became an opportunity for the, basically the neoconservatives and the hardliners in the Bush administration to push for this war that they've been pushing for years. So the very same day that the attack was taking place, as the Pentagon was still burning, that very afternoon, Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld was dictating a memo where he was saying, we have to find a way to bring Hussein into this, Saddam Hussein into this. We have to make this much bigger than it is. I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said.
In other words, they were going to use this as a pretext to go to war. They had already decided to go to war, and we had to have some means of selling it to the American people. Was that
exactly
fair?
Exactly right, yeah. They needed a pretext, a justification for the American people. The American people needed to have a reason, and when they came into office, there wasn't any real reason. After the September 11th attacks, they tried to wrap September 11th around. I mean, they tried very hard to wrap September 11th around Saddam Hussein, and even their intelligence agencies were saying that there is no connection. And that's when they started going to weapons of mass destruction and saying that's the reason. And, you know, everybody knows now that was...
But what they did was they lied to the American people because they had to give them a reason to go to war.
Exactly right. I mean, they were set on going to war. They've been set on going to war. In addition... I haven't even mentioned yet the fact that they all signed this letter in 1998 to Bill Clinton, who was president at the time, basically demanding that he launch a war against Iraq.
Now, you're basically speaking of the Project for the New American Century.
Exactly right.
And that letter is up on their website at newamericancentury.org. Everybody in the listening audience should go to newamericancentury.org, look at the letter that was written in 1998. And who are the people? Dick Cheney, you know, usual suspects.
I mean,
right?
And Rumsfeld, all right. the same people who launched this war.
And so they were planning on this long ahead of time, but they can't tell the American people that. We might get the realization that the government lies to us.
Yeah, they lie in a big way, and a lot of people in the country are paying for it right now, which is a tremendous tragedy.
Well, of course, you really get a couple of other things in your book I thought were fascinating, and I've seen this referenced elsewhere, but never any place that, you know, really I could really totally reputable, totally reliable. But I know from your history and the fact that you are a good researcher, you wouldn't put it in your book if it weren't true. And that is that on the morning of September 11th, 2001, there were several military exercises going on. And those military exercises totally confused the air traffic controllers and totally confused the people who ordinarily would have responded to the threat of an attack. And they thought it was all part of the military exercise. They originally didn't understand that America was under attack. Wasn't it convenient that those hijackers were so smart that they scheduled the attack when those military exercises were going on?
Well, I think a lot of people don't realize how much confusion and chaos is going on in Washington, and you're right, that's exactly what happened. There was a major military exercise going on that morning, and so when the first calls came into NORAD, the North American Air Defense Command, the first thing that the controllers there, officials who had the power to launch planes to retaliate, the first thing they said was, "Is this part of the drill, or is this real?" Because they weren't sure whether this was real or part of the exercise that they were taking part in.
Well, of course, another thing you mentioned, there were only 14 armed airplanes in the entire country to defend us, despite the fact, and you actually quote here extensively from the presidential daily briefing, or a briefing that the president got on the 6th of August, that says, and it's headlined, "Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S. And yet George Tenet and the head of the FBI and everybody in the CIA and everybody in the FBI said, "Oh, we thought the attack was going to be overseas." And yet the president had been told, and I quote, "Bin Laden determined to strike in the U.S. How could they possibly do that? Do you think they were lying to the American people when they told the president that Bin Laden was determined to strike in the U.S. and then they said, "But we thought it was going to be overseas"? How could they be?
Well, there's no way they could have had no idea it was going to be in the United States, because among the things that was uncovered in the last few years, they arrested the person who captured the person who executed the first World Trade Center bombing, Ramzi Youssef, 1993, and among the papers and the computer disks they found was a plan to use, first of all, to blow 13 planes up simultaneously over the Pacific, and second of all, to use aircraft to crash into the CIA building and other places in the United States.
In fact, that was called Operation Bojinka.
Exactly, yes. And then also, and this didn't really get reported very, very much, but in June of 2001, Osama bin Laden asked a reporter from Middle East Broadcasting to come to his base in Afghanistan. And so this reporter came there from Middle East Broadcasting and had a meeting. Bin Laden didn't talk. Bin Laden was there, but he had an agreement with the Taliban government not to be provocative and not to talk to the press anymore.
That was Mullah Omar who had actually...
That's right. Yeah, right. Mullah Omar asked him not to speak to the press anymore because it was causing a lot of pressure on the Taliban. But then his deputies, while Bin Laden was there, gave an interview to this reporter from Middle East Broadcasting, and they said, "We're going to be attacking America soon." So,
but of course, the head of the CIA and the head of the FBI said, "Oh shucks, but we didn't believe him. We thought it was going to be overseas." And yet, the Mossad, the German intelligence, the Jordanian intelligence, the Moroccan intelligence, you know, even Putin had told him the attack was coming here. Do you think that they're deceiving the American people again?
Well, I think there's a lot of deception. I mean, with Condoleezza Rice and everybody else in the lead up to the September 11th attack. I mean, you know, for months and months, they were trying to keep a lot of these documents away from the American public, including that document, PDB, the President's Daily Brief.
Which you have, of course, reproduced in total, which is so important in your book, Pretext for War. We're going to be back in just a moment with James Bamford and its incredible story right here at Radio Liberty.
four tape set on the JFK assassination. It includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out. And if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In the 1970s, there was a group of Italian immigrants in the small town of Rosetto, Pennsylvania, who drew worldwide attention for their unusual cardiovascular health, despite their pasta diets. I recently uncovered the fact that their unusual health was attributed to the precious red wine which they imported from Italy. Today we know this as the French paradox, the fact that the French exhibit greater cardiovascular health despite their fatty diet because of the red wine they drink. Wouldn't it be great to enjoy the health benefits of red wine without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives? Well, now you can with Longevinex, the world's first stabilized red wine molecules preserved in an airtight capsule just like in a sealed bottle of red wine, equivalent to 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex for healthy aging without the calories and alcohol. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tieri. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs, in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Last 3 years, gold and silver have been quietly attracting
the attention. Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know.
No small wonder when you consider that in those last 3 years, gold has risen over 50% and silver has nearly doubled. So, are you in profit yet? You might think so if you bought gold or silver coins in the last 3 years. And true enough, some coins have increased by as much as 70%. So how do you know how much your portfolio has gained or lost? With a quick call to the asset management professionals at Colonial Resources. 1-800-685-4042. Colonial Resources will give you current market quotes on your gold or silver bullion and collector coins. If you're ready to sell, Colonial pays higher prices for your coins than almost anyone in the industry. And if you doubt that, call the company that sold them to you and ask what they'd buy them for, and then call us. To find out where you stand in the rapidly changing precious metals market, call Colonial Resources today, toll free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is James Bamford, and we've been talking about the prelude or the pretext for war. And certainly as you've gone through this whole study, and, you know, of course, I'm sure you've evaluated the 9/11 Commission report and the other reports. Do you think that there was adequate evidence that there was going to be an attack in the United States, and for some reason they just didn't do any of the logical things, like knowing that there was going to be an attack, having more fighter planes, you know, ready, like maybe even arming the planes at, you know, right across the river, right across the Potomac, so that planes could have been there in a minute or two?
Well, sure, those are some of the most logical things that would have been done. In any case, if you're going to try to protect the United States, why have if you're going to have that few planes, why put one in Massachusetts and one in Virginia and have nothing near either Washington or New York? So when the attack took place, the planes were just too far away to do any good. And, you know, it's just amazing to me that a country like the United States would be protected by 14 fighter planes, the entire continental United States. So nobody realized any of these things were taking place until, you know, until all the attacks took place and we had the congressional hearings. Nobody, I think, could have believed that we were so unprotected.
But it wasn't that the administration, certainly the National Security Council, which had very, very few people on at the time, because they'd restricted the access even of the people from the Joint Chiefs of Staff to the fact that an attack was imminent. Why would they let the acting head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff know what was going on?
At the time of the attack, he had an appointment on Congress, and it's rather amazing, but the person who was a senior military officer in the United States at the time of the attacks on September 11th was in a meeting with a congressman on Capitol Hill during the entire event, and he didn't come out of that meeting until 20 minutes to 10 after all the attacks had taken place, and he had no idea what was going on.
But didn't he see, before he went in, the picture of one of these planes flying?
He saw one of the planes go in, and then while he was in the meeting with, I think it was a senator from Georgia, nobody paged him to tell him that the second tower had been hit, and that president's national or the president's chief of staff has just told the president that the United States is under attack.
Well, you know, but that is exactly what George Bush said. He said he saw the first plane pictures on television of the first plane hitting the building, and yet, of course, those pictures weren't available until much later in the day because they were taken by a French journalist. So both the president and the acting chief military man saw the second plane hitting the building, and yet they did absolutely nothing.
Well, that's what's so curious about the president's comments after the attack, because if you went on his website or listened to him give a number of talks, what he said was that he went into this little anteroom before he went to speak to the students, and then once he went into the anteroom, he saw on the television one of the planes hit the World Trade Center.
And it was
saw the plane hit the World Trade Center. And there was no video of that until later that day. The only person that took that video was these French cameramen, and they didn't have any live cameras. They were just video cameras, and they had to. It took, you know, most of the day before they actually got those pictures on television. So if he actually did see a plane hit the tower, it couldn't have been the first one since there were was no video available at the time. It had to be the second one. And if he watched the second plane hit the World Trade Center, why would he go into a class of second graders to read a child's book to them, knowing that the two towers have just been hit by commercial aircraft?
But even after Andrew Carr had come in, and I forgot who it was who whispered in his ear.
Yeah, Andrew Carr.
That we were under attack. He still sat there for another 6 minutes.
Minutes, actually, yeah.
How many minutes?
I think it was 7 minutes.
7 minutes. He sat there for 7 minutes. I mean, decisions had to be made. I mean, he was the only one who could authorize, our fighter planes to shoot down incoming terrorist planes.
Well, could you imagine Franklin Delano Roosevelt being told that the Japanese had just attacked Pearl Harbor and having him sit there in a second grade class for 7 minutes?
Well, I think we've got real problems. And I don't think that for 1 minute that George Bush was privy to all of the information our intelligence agencies are. There's always got to be plausible denial. But I think that, of course, when he realized the enormity of what had happened, I think, like most of us, he was shocked and frightened to death.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened at Oklahoma City, what really happened with TWA 800 on the went down off the eastern coast a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that'll give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today, 800-544-8927, 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I guess this afternoon is James Bamford. His book, A Pretext for War. That's A Pretext for War, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And of course, the book covers many, many of the things that led up to what was going on. You pointed out that George Tenet, the director of the CIA, had said he declared war on Osama bin Laden, but they didn't tell anybody, the people in the FBI, even many people in the CIA didn't know that the head of the CIA declared war on Osama bin Laden as a real threat to America. He was going to attack us. How could you possibly have a major program and nobody know about it?
Well, exactly, and that's what the people of the FBI said. He may have declared a U.S. war against bin Laden, but he never told the FBI or other people. In addition to that, he never increased the budget. The budget for the CIA was increased, but within the CIA, Tenet didn't increase the budget of the counterintelligence, or rather counterterrorism center. So, if you're going to declare war on a organization, you would think that you'd increase the budget of the group and the agency that's doing the war, and he never did that. So George Tenet's gotten he's gotten out very lately on this whole thing. Not only was he not fired by the president, the president awarded him the highest medal to a civilian that can be awarded by a president.
Well, there's only two things that I can imagine for that. Either, you know, the president is totally incompetent, or George Tenet did exactly what he was supposed to do. I mean, why else would you not fire him and give him a medal when 3,000 Americans are dead?
Well, it was an interesting article I saw a couple days ago. I don't know how accurate it was, but it was, I think it was in one of the major newspapers, but it was basically that there appears to have been an agreement pretty much between Bush and Tenet, whereby if it was agreed that Bush would not blame Tenet for what went on, you know, criticize him for a lot of the mistakes that were made, that Tenet would not come out after he left the CIA with an expose pointing his finger at the Bush administration and George Bush as to being totally incompetent. And that looks like pretty much what happened, because when Tenet left, he was given the National Security Medal, and at the same time he was offered a $5 million book contract. And then when they sent him the contract to sign, he refused to sign it.
Or maybe he didn't want to end up like Mr. Colby did. Be that as it may, another thing that you, very good point that you made, was that they had this group that was supposed to kill Osama bin Laden, kill or capture him. And,
yeah.
You know, and the president had given permission, only the president could give permission to kill somebody, and it was kill or capture or eliminate him. They spent hundreds of millions of dollars on this project, and they couldn't do that. And, you know, then they had nobody inside the Al-Qaeda organization, they tell us. Yet Johnny, what was his name? Lynn Walker was able to go over there and join. Why couldn't they just send somebody over to pretend to be a Muslim supporter and get him into the inner core? Johnny Lynn Walker met with Osama bin Laden. He could do it, and our intelligence agencies that can, you know, that have these satellites in the sky, they can read a newspaper from outer space, they couldn't figure out that maybe they ought to send somebody in like Johnny Lynn Walker and infiltrate Al-Qaeda? Doesn't make sense.
Well, I think that was the worst mistake they made. The intelligence community was getting, at the time, it was $30 billion a year. Now they're getting $40 billion. And with that $30 billion, and the CIA, which goes with this, you know, they have this big reputation of being all-seeing and full of people like James Bond and so forth. And yet, here it is, they can't infiltrate Al-Qaeda, and yet a college dropout from Marin County, California, John Walker Lynn, not only infiltrates Al-Qaeda, he goes to, he gets accepted in Al-Qaeda training camp, the principal Al-Qaeda training camp, and gets several personal meetings with bin Laden. He even picked up little bits and pieces of the plot. He didn't know exactly when and where it was going to happen, but he heard that, that there was a plot to attack the United States. And at the same time John Walker Lynn was going through the bin Laden training camp in Afghanistan, there were six or seven other Americans in there also. These were the native-born Americans from the Buffalo area.
Yemen.
Lackawanna,
right.
Area. And they were all in there at the same time. So here you had, you know, about seven or eight people, including John Walker Lynn, all Americans who all get in there without, you know, an awful lot of effort. And yet there was not a single intelligence agent that ever what's worse than the fact that they never got in was the admission by George Tenet that they never even tried to infiltrate Al-Qaeda.
But of course, do you think that they're really being really objective and honest with us? Because let's imagine that they're telling the truth. Certainly the Mossad had people in Al-Qaeda. The Jordanian intelligence had people in Al-Qaeda. Moroccan intelligence had people in Al-Qaeda. How could all these, none of these other countries would give us any of their information? The Mossad told us that the attack was coming on the United States. And they said, oh, we don't believe you. It's going to be over in Europe someplace. 99% sure. Why wasn't anybody fired? I mean,
you didn't have to have somebody in there. Bin Laden came out in June and said it himself. Uh-huh. I mean, his people came out on television. It was broadcast all over the world that Bin Laden He'd done it several times before. He did it on ABC News. He came out and they did an interview on ABC News, and a few months later, they blew up the, I think it was the USS Cole, or it was the American embassies in East Africa, one of the two.
Well, that was in 98, and then the Cole was in 2000.
Yeah, so it was, I think it was in 98 that ABC News did the interview with bin Laden, and then it was only a few months later, they did the interview with him, I think it was in May, they aired it in May, and bin Laden said, you know, I'm going to attack the United States, and here the embassies get attacked a few months later. So in June of 2001, bin Laden says, I'm going to attack the United States. You would have thought that they would have had as many preparations as possible, and they didn't.
They didn't. And
George Tenet was having a leisurely breakfast with a friend of his in downtown Washington on the morning of September 11th. He was... There were people that were lying in bed watching television while lying in bed who learned of the attack on September 11th before the Director of Central Intelligence.
It seems incredible that the president did not fire somebody. You know, you would think that the laws, I mean, in any other country in the world, they would have fired somebody, and here they give them one of the highest medals available. So
it's the old Peter principle, the worse you do, the bigger the award you get, so...
Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. James Bamford has done a tremendous amount of work. And did you interview a lot of the people you talk about here?
I interviewed a great many people. Some of them let me use their name, and some of them didn't.
All right, fine. And certainly cover many of the things that you're not going to see elsewhere, including the presidential decision briefing that the PPD, I guess it is, PPD, that actually was
PDB, President's Daily Brief.
Right, and that's the August 6th one, which you really need to read, and you need to read it through about five times to know they know exactly where it was going to happen. So they said, well, they didn't tell us the date or where they're going to attack. Well, you didn't have to know the date. What you would do would be to put our airlines on the alert, because they talk about hijacking, and have our military on alert, like our airplanes maybe. But none of that was done. In fact, the FAA didn't even really put out any real warning to the people on the airlines, did they?
No, there was no warning at all. And you would think that one of the things that they would have done was put out a notice that they should be checking for box cutters and knives and things like that, which they never did. So.
Or maybe even being a little careful about people of Middle Eastern extraction, but of course we wouldn't want to do that. We just want to search everybody going on there today. Well, of course you tell all sorts of fascinating things about Robert Reed, the mad shoe bomber, and so many of these people come alive. And of course, Ramzi Yosef, he was the master bomber who actually blew up the World Trade Center.
Right.
And he laid out the plan that really the Operation Bajenka, which was the September 11th plan. Now, who was Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and why is he so important?
Well, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was the uncle of Ramzi Yousef. They were very close. They were almost like brothers, although Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was, 10 years older or so. And they both went to, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed actually went to college in the United States. He got an engineering degree in a college, I think it was North Carolina or South Carolina, one of those places. And then Ramzi Yousef got an engineering degree in Wales, in England. So they were very close. They weren't religious. Neither of them were very religious. But they had a hatred for the United States, largely because of the United States' involvement with Israel and the United States' involvement with the whole foreign policy in the Middle East. So they had planned to attack the World Trade Center in early 90s, and they drew up this plan that they eventually ended up with the explosion in the garage of the World Trade Center. Their hope originally was to blow up one tower and then have that tower fall into the other and destroy the two towers. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was one of the people financing it, and one of the people, one of the brains behind the operation. He stayed back in Pakistan. Ramzi Yousef was in the United States, and then the day World Trade Center explosion took place, Ramzi Youssef got on a plane and flew back to Pakistan, and he was later captured there. But they did leave a letter behind, and the letter was very articulately written. It went into great detail as to why they did it, and they explained that they did it for the reasons I just mentioned, U.S. support for Israel and the U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East. And one of the last things they wrote on the letter was that we weren't completely successful this time, but we're going to come back and do it again. I mean, there's your, how much more notice did they need? And then Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was also behind the mastermind behind the attack on the USS Cole and also the attack on the U.S. embassies in East Africa. So the same person out there who said, I'm going to come back and blow up the World Trade Center, was blowing up these other things, so they knew he was still active and still wanting to do that. So, you know, you would have thought somebody somewhere could have put two and two together. Number one, they come up with the Project Bohica plan, showing they're going to crash planes in the buildings. And number two, they're going to come back and get the World Trade Center sometime.
And, of course, actually, Bill Gertz, we have something he wrote up on the Internet. It was in June, a couple of months before the 9/11 attack, where he talked about Operation Bojanka and the fact that specifically, at least according to him, it involved the World Trade Center, among other things. So, obviously, these people in government, they must have known what Bill Gertz knew, because he was getting information from the CIA. Well, what happened to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed? I sort of had an idea from your book that you talked to somebody who'd been involved with questioning him.
He was eventually arrested, and he's still held in an unknown location.
Now, why don't they just bring him out and put him on trial? I mean,
that's a good question. I mean, how long are you going to keep somebody under wraps like that? And I would think that it would serve as a deterrent if you actually bring him out and put him on trial. The problem is they probably I've been torturing him and doing all kinds of other things, so it's impossible to actually try him now.
Without being
a big embarrassment for the U.S. government.
You're not suggesting our government would use torture.
Well, they certainly have had enough people that have shown very credible evidence that they've been doing it.
But and we have a Christian administration there. I mean, why doesn't George Bush do something about that?
Well, they have this little game that they say we're not torturing people, but what they do is they turn them over to countries like Egypt or Syria or someplace that does torture the people.
Well, I think
and then we say, well, we told them not to do it, and so it's not our responsibility. I mean, it's very juvenile to do something like that.
Well, I think
you either take responsibility for what you're going to do and admit to it, or you don't do it. And here they're trying to have it both ways.
Well, I think men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose, and if the American people aren't willing to take a stand on this sort of thing, then none of us should be outraged when the other side tortures our boys. And
the people that should be the angriest are the people in the military. Because,
I think so too.
Because we're setting an example for other countries. If they get captured, then they're going to look to what the U.S. has done in Guantanamo, or this plane that the CIA has that picks people up all over the world and takes them to places to get tortured. They can read the newspaper just like everybody else can, So why should they obey international law if the United States isn't doing it?
Well, at one time we had Thank you. Thank you.
We'll send you a free copy if you call us at 1-800-544-8927. And then we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, because this truly is a spiritual battle. And there really are dark spiritual forces that are involved at the highest levels of our government. We ask you to pray for our leaders and ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. So until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.